Hello there, this is me, Matt Smith, welcoming you, the listener, to a La Trobe University podcast. America Decides, the World Watches. We're discussing the US 2012 election, and I am joined, as always, by Professor Nick Bisley from the Politics and International Relations area of La Trobe University. Thank you for joining me, Nick.
Thanks, Matt.
Well, 1 week out for the election, who would have picked it? A natural disaster. Is there anything that's good coming out of this?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's obviously been a huge amount of debate as to how Sandy is going to play in the election. Is this something that naturally, as most people think, going to play to Obama's strengths, or more particularly play to the strengths of the incumbent? So, you know, when there's a big natural disaster or some other kind of catastrophe, the president gets to be presidential. You get to hand out blankets. You swoop in with the helicopters and FEMA and the whole bit. And the opponent on the sidelines going, I matter too. So there's a sort of instinctive thought that this is going to be something that's going to help Obama. Notwithstanding all of that, I'm not sure that's actually going to be a huge advantage to Obama, because everyone's sort of monitoring everything that he says and that Romney says for the faintest whiff of being political about it and playing politics with it that could rebound on you if you try to leverage this in any way. There's that. And I think also there's something that people often talk about, is, you know, the very short-term focus that people have. You know, this kind of, this is now, in 3 days' time, will we have forgotten it? Will this be something that shapes how people are going to vote? On balance, I think it's probably not going to affect people's preferences. The one thing where I think we have probably seen a clear effect that's not been to Romney's advantage has been the way in which it's put a pause on the campaign. It's sort of, particularly in media discussions, polling, everything just kind of stopped for 2 or 3 days, effectively really put a cap on the Romney momentum. And certainly the story that the Romney campaign have been trying to sell for the past few days, or past week or so, has been this is a campaign surge, that, you know, we were down and out prior to the first debate. First debate, we got energized, momentum started. It kept growing and growing and growing, and it's going to be this inevitable force and the crescendo on the 6th of November. Sandy has stopped all of that. That's a difficult story to restart, and everyone talks about momentum as being something that's hard to stop, but it's also very hard to start, and it's something hard to restart it. And we saw that with Obama. He was the one who had the momentum prior to the debate. The first debate, his momentum stopped in its tracks, and Romney got it. And the Obama administration found it very difficult to claw back that lost energy. So if you're looking at how this is going to play out, I think that's probably the one tangible consequence of all of this. But I think how many people are going to change the way they were going to vote based on this event, I don't think too many. And it's not, and I don't buy this as the big October surprise.
It might be a bit concerning that the path that Sandy's gone on has pretty much cut a swathe through very pro-Obama states, and that it actually might affect how many people go out and vote, not so much how they are going to vote.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I mean, is this going to stop large enough numbers of people? New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, these are rock solid Democrat states. Are enough Democrats not going to be able to come out and vote because of this? I don't think so. If this had hit further south, Ohio, Colorado, Michigan, Virginia, Florida at the same time, which would be geographically very intriguing, then you might be getting into that. And I think particularly with states like Virginia, where it's on a knife edge very much, that kind of, are there going to be particular counties, especially if they're counties where the vote is very heavily concentrated, then you might get something. Because, you know, if you look at the electoral map, say Virginia, this is a state that got a corner that's very blue, it's very Democrat, that's effectively suburban Washington, D.C., that's very, very heavily votes Democrat, and then the bulk of the rest of the state, and certainly all of the non-urban parts, are very heavily Republican. So if you had some kind of thing that badly affected the Democrat element, so the urban elements, flooding, power loss, whatever it might be, then you'd see that in a really tight race. But where it happened was not states where the balance is particularly fine.
From memory, this is Obama's first natural disaster since he became president. Can the way that he deals with it bring quite an upswing to it? Because I noticed he's gotten some Republicans on his side for the way that he's been conducting himself over the last few days.
I think for Obama, if you don't really stuff it up, there's only going to be upside to all of this. But I just think it's not sufficiently large upside, and the president can take credit for the general behavior of and effectiveness of federal agencies in disaster relief. And conversely, as we saw with Bush, can take the blame when things don't go right. But will this change the way people vote or their preferences?
I think it's too close to the election to change the way that people would vote.
I think there's the proximity thing, but I think there's also a sense that the sort of response that the government's provided is what you expect. Of course, this is how it should be. If they don't do that, then you punish them. They don't sit there and go, gosh, I'm really glad that worked really, really well, and I'm now going to vote for Obama. Conservatives have also said, you know, this is tailor-made, of course, for big government. You know, this is a big government response to a big disaster. This suits Obama's predilections in government. And Romney has been trying to say, you know, they're trying to portray how one ought to respond to these kinds of disasters as bottom-up, private citizens clubbing together, doing things, and the government isn't to do it. But all of this, I think, is ultimately around the margins.
So what is coming out as the last-ditch efforts for the campaigns at the moment then?
Well, what they're doing now, if you look at where they're going, each of them is targeting states that they think are still in play and also trying to signal elsewhere to the electorate where they think the states to signal a kind of momentum where they think states are still in play. So for Romney, he's spending time in, as I recall, he's going to New Hampshire, he's going to Virginia, he's going to Ohio, he's going to Florida in the next, this is over this coming weekend. And Obama's he's not going to Florida, but he's going to Colorado, Nevada, where else is he going? Virginia as well. There's one other. I can't recall exactly, but in essence, they're spending all their time and energy on those half dozen states which are going to decide the fate. I think there's been about 10 to 12 states that everyone's identified as the swing states with around 140, 145 electoral college votes collectively. It's beginning to be pretty clear which ones are going to fall to one side or the other. I think most people think that Florida is going to go with Romney. Most people think that most of the other swing states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nevada, are likely to go to Obama. So they're all pinning their hopes, and it's going to leave things slightly in Obama's favour. But the money, so to speak, is going to be in Ohio, Colorado, Virginia, because they're the ones which, if you win all of those, you get it either side, and they're the three that are the closest. Virginia's on a knife edge, absolutely on a knife edge. Ohio, Obama's got a distinct advantage and a persistent advantage, so you tend to think he's probably got that one, but it's still within margin of error, so the Romney campaign clearly, and he has to win that mathematically. He cannot not win without getting Ohio, given what he's got at the moment. And then Colorado, which is, I think we talked about last time with Raoul, is a state whose demographics have turned it into a swing state, and one which has been very, very line ball, flipping one way or the other over the past few weeks. Looks like Obama's probably got a slight edge there, but it's still very much up in play. An interesting other thing's been happening where Romney's campaign has been trying to signal that they think some other states are in play as well, and spending a lot of money on ads. Now the question then is, do they actually think it's in play, or are they playing a game in which they're trying to signal that it's in play, trying to generate this momentum sentiment? And some people have said this isn't momentum, it's fomentum. You know, it's this attempt to whip up a sense of enthusiasm, that enthusiasm which was dampened by Sandy, and to say, Pennsylvania, hey, a Republican hasn't won Pennsylvania in 20 plus years, but we think it's in play. Serious analysis says it's not in play, but they've just dropped $10 or $15 million in ads, blanketed the state in pro-Romney ads, or more precisely, anti-Obama ads, because that's another thing we might want to talk about, is just how relentlessly negative most of this campaign has been.
Well, can we take a step back at the moment? I do have a query about Ohio, because every poll that I read today said Obama by, every poll said Obama, I think, by at least two.
Mm.
So why is that sort of thing still considered a swing state when no poll is coming back as Romney?
Well, because 2% is still within the margin of error. Most polling will have a margin of error between 2 and 3%, depending on the size of the sample and the way they do it. what this means, and also depends on who they're sampling. Are they sampling likely vote people who are self-identified as likely voters? Are they sampling registered voters?
Mm.
Because different sample pools will produce quite different outcomes. There's also different polls will have different biases. So there are, if you look at a particular polling company, often a particular polling company will have a tendency have a bias towards one party or one socioeconomic group, so that you need to be able to put all of this in some degree, or treat all of this with some degree of caution, because there's how people will answer the phone and say, I'm for Obama. And then there's the actual question of on November 6th, who will show up and pull the lever to vote for Obama? And when it's 2%, even though it's persistently 2%, if it's only 2%, you're still in a situation where if a whole bunch of people who you didn't call happen to show up, then all things can, you know, things can get turned on their head to some degree. I mean, you won't have 20% margin. You're not going to have a total, totally unexpected result. But don't forget, how has polling happened? Polling happens with telephones, landlines, not mobile phones. Now, there's a large chunk of the demographic out there that probably don't even have landlines. And there's a large jet that then the sort of people who have landlines and answer polling potentially reflect a slightly different socioeconomic group. So there's a tendency to treat, well, there's a need to treat all of these polls with a degree of caution. That said, if you look at aggregate polls, so data that brings together, so information that brings together lots of different polls, 15, 20, 30 over a long period of time, and charts that, you can begin to say with some confidence that if you've got 15 or 20 polls, and Ohio is polled at that rate, all of which, notwithstanding their own predilections and biases and that sort of stuff, are pointing to a 2% margin, you can probably begin to think that's there. The other thing with Romney is he has to treat it like it's in play, even though it's not. Or even though a lot of us think, on balance, it's probably not going to fall his way, because he's got to have Ohio.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think he's still right to, I mean, he's right to think it because he has to think that, but he's right to think it because there's still a set of circumstances in which he wins Ohio.
Okay, so the negativeness of the campaign, you mentioned that before, so we'll have a talk about that. Has it become a dirty game now? Is there any respect in the campaign?
There is the formal respect. You know, you saw that faux camaraderie that they shake each other's hands and clap each other over the shoulders at the end of the debates. Obama and Romney,
they were squeeze-handing, though. Squeezing each other's hands.
And yeah, you always wonder what they're actually saying. You pay a lip reader or something to figure it out, but. They evidently really personally don't like each other, and apparently Obama is quite visceral in his dislike of Romney, which people who know him well say is unusual because he doesn't normally react like that to people. He's a very famously kind of balanced, detached, cool customer. But I think we talked about in an earlier podcast that there does seem to be in the ads and in the emails and in the robot calling a degree of Lord of the Flies kind of morality about the election. You know, there used to be things you didn't say. There used to be things you didn't imply or insinuate. Or if they did, it would be a one-off and everyone would run away from it. You'd have plausible deniability. This campaign is so remorselessly negative and critical that it beggars belief as to what's next. I mean, I think stats I saw the other day said that, or pointed out that 85 to 86% of Obama's ads, so ads supported by the Obama campaign or by the super PACs taking out ads on his behalf, 85% were negative of Romney. So not vote for Obama because he's a good guy, vote for Obama because he's got the leadership. It's don't vote for that guy because he's not trustworthy, gives the game to the Chinese or whatever it is. But the Romney campaign has been marginally more positive, something like 80% are negative instead of 85%. But it's really striking. And if you compare it to the 08 campaign or even the 04 campaign, where it's more like 60-40, 55-45, it's a real turnaround. And I think that partly reflects the Obama administration putting a lot of, betting very heavily on 4 more years, and that's it. as a campaign, and essentially saying, give us more time and don't trust that guy. He's a out of touch, plutocratic, corporate raider thug. And I think speaking to that disenchanted, sacked employee who sees in Romney the faceless executive who fired them. And I think that has not played as well as they would have liked. And I think that partly accounts for the closeness of the campaign. And I think the other thing that accounts for the closeness of the campaign is just how bad the economy is. And it's not surprising, I think, that the Romney campaign's very negative, but it's just surprising the degree of negativity. And again, I think they're trying to tap into that. In the ads, they're trying to tap into that conservative block that really viscerally dislikes Obama. While also, so they're trying to do two. The strategy for the Romney camp is a tricky one, because on the one hand, you've got to make sure your core conservative block is locked in, and they have always been a little bit skeptical about Romney. So you've got to keep them happy, and negative ads are a good way of doing that. But then you've also got to campaign to the middle, and you've got to present yourself, as he has done quite effectively, as the Liberal governor of Massachusetts. And negative ads and the debate and all these various things that can begin to be a way in which you can play that double game.
They're taken on a real, they're almost, a lot of them are like horror, little horror movies, this is what will happen if this person gets into power. To the extent where some of the ones that I've watched, I've kind of gone, this isn't legit. This has been done by some nutter with Final Cut Pro.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Oh my God, it's on Obama's official YouTube channel. So is can't it get to the point though where it's just going to turn people off, that they just go, I don't want to vote for this dirty.
Well, that's one of the risks. Campaign. That's one of the risks with all of this, and this is why people with this strategy, and this is why analysts also think that the turnout in this election is going to be heading back south again, even though 2008 wasn't a particularly strong turnout. I mean, we tend to think of this big win that Obama had and the enthusiasm of youth to vote him in. But it still only had about 1 or 2 percentage points higher turnout than the 2004 election for the re-election of George Bush. So there's a sense at which this alienates a lot of people. And the game of politics, the professionalised, highly focus group driven game of politics played by professionals, that's no, the rule book got chucked out the window, I think a real risk. I mean, it's really evident in the United States, and it's evident in a lot of electoral democracies. You see it in Australia, you see it in Britain and elsewhere, where the electorate feels quite disengaged by a political class that has one view of the world and is prepared to play very cynical, very unpleasant games that your average voter just says, forget it. Now, in Australia, we have to vote.
Mm.
But in the US, as we've talked about before, the game is in many respects won or lost by how many people turn out. And one of the risks, I think, with Obama's very highly negative campaign is those disenchanted Democrats who invested a lot in Obama's hope rhetoric and change story from 2008, who are never going to vote Republican, are just sufficiently turned away to say, forget it, that's it, I'm staying home
on
November 6th. One thing I read recently, I think it was in The Economist from last week's issue, was there's this sort of very small grassroots write-in campaign for Bill Clinton, because Clinton is astonishingly popular. And, he's the guy who sells Obama better than Obama sells Obama. And there's these people saying, if we do a writing campaign, Bill Clinton could be our president again. And we all like Bill. He's the guy, he's more moderate than Obama. He's, he's got the personality. He's got all that, communication skill that Obama palpably lacks, at least this time around. But yeah, it's not going to happen. But it's an interesting indicator that there are people out there who are lifelong Democrats. They want to vote for the Democratic Party, but they just
It's a bit worrying when people are a bit nostalgic for Bill Clinton.
But don't forget, I mean, notwithstanding the Lewinsky affair, he had the most consistently high public approval ratings of any president in the modern era, in terms of just throughout his presidency. and left office on a, you know, for someone who was who had been impeached. I mean, that he wasn't the impeached. The articles of impeachment weren't passed, but he was impeached. That's quite striking. It also tells you how out of touch the Republican Congress was in doing it. But the interesting thing, of course, is that Clinton, I think, still feels a degree of bitterness about the fact that he's not the first man or first lady or whatever position he would have been, because Obama only just beat Hillary, don't forget, in the primary campaign in 08. And you can bet the bottom dollar that if Hillary had won that, she would have been in the White House. And so there's a, I think there's always this kind of slightly jaded quality to Clinton. Or not jaded. I think it was jaded at first. I think he's not jaded now. But there's always a slightly wistful air that this should have been, you know, he should be campaigning for a Clinton, not for an Obama.
So just to wrap it up, are you still calling it as being Obama's win?
Yep. I think Obama will win. I think Obama will win both the popular vote, and I think he'll win the Electoral College vote. I think most people, most pollsters who've been tracking this stuff closely think he's got the edge on the Electoral College, but there's a greater degree of uncertainty about the popular vote, and that will be interesting to, very interesting to see play out if he does do what George Bush did in 2000 and win the Electoral College vote without the popular vote. I don't think that'll happen. I think if you, you know, if you look at the polling nationally, so national plebiscite stuff, Romney's marginally ahead, but it's but by very small amounts, and it's very fickle. So depending on the poll you read, you get quite different results. If you add up all the state polls, however, so if you look at the popularity in the state polls, state by state, they add up to a small but decisive popular win. Now, the maths on that's kind of interesting, and it reflects sampling differences and that sort of stuff. I think that Obama will win, I think I said last time, and I don't see any reason to change at this stage. I think he's going to win with 193 Electoral College votes. I think Romney will take Florida and North Carolina, and Obama will take all the other swing states. I think he'll he'll steal Virginia with by a whisker. I think he's got a sort of it's on an absolute knife edge, but I think he'll fall over the line there. He'll take Ohio, I think, reasonably comfortably, and I think he'll also get Florida. That'll get him to 293. But we have to wait and see, and we never know who will turn up. The sampling, there could be sampling, structural sampling biases in the polling. If you're a pro-Obama, the argument is the sampling that they use, the sampling techniques they use, underestimate the extent to which minorities, so African-American and Latino voters, will show up, and underestimate the number of voters in the 18 to 25 demographic who will show up, because they're all assuming that those two demographics won't show up in as high levels as they did in 08. So pro-Obama people say the sampling's out and he's going to win by heaps. He'll win by 330 plus and a big majority on the national the overall popularity stakes. I don't buy it, but that's that spin. The pro-Romney spin is the reverse, of course, which is the sampling error is wrong in the other direction, and that disenfranchised white working class, squeezed middle class voters will turn out in higher numbers, and the core Obama voters will turn out in lower numbers, and Romney will get over the line. I don't buy it. So I think Obama will get back in. Just he'll be badly bruised, chastened by his experiences. I think at the start of the campaign, when we first started doing these podcasts, I think Obama felt like he was cruising to victory. He just didn't have to screw it up. Romney was sufficiently unliked by the Republicans and a sufficiently unlikable person to your average elector that, notwithstanding the poor economy and some of the missteps of the Obama administration, his money, his charm, his electoral panache was going to wipe the floor with the upstart from Massachusetts. And that was a very, very, you know, that we saw was wrong. And Romney has run an extraordinarily good campaign, very effective at selling a strong critique of Obama's handling of the economy, and Obama's going to fall over the line and have four more years in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But We have to wait and see who shows up on November 6th.
I guess we'll find out in 5 days' time. Thanks very much, Professor Nick Bisley, for your time today, and I'll catch you on the flip side of the election.
Thanks, Matt.